and welcome to Best Girl Grip, the podcast that celebrates the women behind the scenes of the British film industry. I'm your host, Nicole Davis.
Hello, pod pals. I hope you've had a wonderful weekend with lots of sun, be that outside or at the Sundance London Film Festival. Personally, I got a little sunburnt sitting in my garden whilst watching Ali Wong's new movie on Netflix, Always Be My Maybe. Two lessons from that. Always up your SPF and never sleep with your BFF. This week, in the second edition of my four-part Flatpak special, I speak to Amy Smart, who manages Flatpak's year-round activity under the banner of Film Hub Midlands, a BFI-funded project working with the Film Audience Network to help build a more thriving film community in that region. It was a really energetic and fun interview, and I can absolutely see why last week's guest, Alex Jackson, chose Amy as someone whom she found inspirational. We talk about how she started out in the film industry, why her job makes her feel like James Garner in The Great Escape, what happens when you program something that only four people show up to, and what her proudest programming moment is. I also want to give a heads up that the sound quality on this one is a little bit ropey. That's actually quite a convenient pun, but basically I found out later in the room above there was a kid skipping, so I hope that's not too distracting. This is episode 21 of Best Girl Grip.
So I went to the University of Wolverhampton. I studied English Literature and Film Studies. And I really, really loved the course and couldn't advocate for that university. And one of the amazing things was we had all of our film lectures in a cinema, an independent cinema called The Lighthouse, who I actually work with now as part of my job in Film Midlands, which is pretty cool, yeah.
Nice circularity. So you knew even then that film was something that you were interested in just as a hobby or as a career? You really thought...
Definitely as a hobby. Yeah. I would have loved... When I was at university, definitely had aspirations to work in film, but was kind of the opinion that it probably never happen. Sort of fell in love with film when I was about five, and my parents took me for the first time, and just like, wow, this is awesome. Yeah, I never really thought I'd end up doing what I do.
And why did you think it would ever happen? Because you had your goals set on, like, you just knew that maybe like director was a job, and you didn't...
Well, absolutely. I mean, the film industry, a lot of people that you talk to, and a lot of people at university that I studied with, we all wanted to be film directors. And that's quite ambitious, you know, but being from Birmingham and going to Wolverhampton and, you know, I come from a working class background and, you know, my sister had gone to university, but nobody else really in our family. So it was kind of like probably not going to end up in Hollywood making movies.
But it's also interesting how, yeah, that's like the pinnacle, but yeah, it requires that ecosystem of roles around it.
Absolutely. Well, so. I had no idea. There's probably to this day hundreds of different roles within the industry that I don't actually know what they are. And I think a lot of people do that. They immediately think about those big roles, the ones that are in the limelight, I guess. And you don't think about the accountant that has to work on the film, or the key grip, or the editor or whatever.
And what was your first role in the industry?
So my first paid role in a film was actually a bit of an amazing one. It was a cinema producer at Mac.
Oh, wow.
Which is a one-screen independent cinema as part of a mixed arts centre in Birmingham. And I'm really, really lucky to have kind of landed my dream job on the first go. But and a lot of it was luck, but it wasn't actually the job that I applied for. It was a more of a kind of administrative role, but the person that interviewed me clearly saw something in me, and my passion for sort of film came out in the interview. And so she just kind of put me in charge, and it was like, okay. Almost by accident, got to run a cinema, and it was incredible. It was an amazing experience. I loved that job very much, and I was there for just over 5 years and learned so much about film exhibition. Because kind of before that interview, I didn't really know that film programmer was a thing. You know, you get to pick films to show to other people and get paid for it. What? That's a job? It's incredible. So that's what I mean about having all those roles in the industry that you don't really understand what they are, or that your skill set might be perfectly matched to.
And can you unpack what a cinema producer is a little bit? Is programming your main priority, and what else around that are you taking care of?
So it was a one-screen venue. It was full-time. So we used to screen about 900 films a year. And the programme, it was a single screen, and it was a programme that was dedicated to kind of independent British film, documentaries, foreign language. It was kind of focused on world cinema. We did the occasional mainstream title, but so part of it was learning kind of the tricks of the trade. A lot of it is around audience development and knowing your audience and kind of who you're going to target and who you're catering for. So doing lots of research, and the building, the art centre, had actually been closed for a couple of years for a redevelopment. Mm-hmm. And when I started, it was reopening it. So it was the launch. It was kind of starting from scratch in some ways as well. So it was really exciting because we had this screen and we could kind of do what we wanted with it. So I worked along a larger arts team of six of us, and it was theatre, dance, visual arts, learning, etc. It was a very collaborative environment and gave us the space to kind of put ideas forward and go, oh, I want to screen this film about whatever. And then someone else might go, oh, that would fit in really well with this course that we're doing. So we could kind of build programmes and stuff around that. But yeah, so looking at what's out there, looking at what's trending in the market, having an eye on sort of new releases, and then also looking for those smaller titles that perhaps would miss the Midlands or that wouldn't necessarily get shown, definitely not in multiplexes. We wanted to give audiences something a bit different, and the offer was definitely different from... So there's a lot of cinemas in Birmingham. There's like 3 or 4 Odeons, and there's a couple of Cineworlds and an Empire. So we were definitely pitching at a different crowd from the mainstream audience. And dealing with distributors, which can sometimes be a nightmare, can sometimes be an absolute pleasure, and sort of, you know, working out deals and learning how a lot of it is negotiation and, you know, what you can kind of talk your way into. And marketing was a huge part of it as well, because particularly with those smaller releases where they don't have a big budget to splash their film on the side of buses or in TV ads and stuff. So having to really think creatively about how we can get this film in front of people and make them interested enough to come and, you know, risk £10 on a ticket to come and see it. So
I think I only learnt recently that cinemas can kind of choose when to put something into their cinemas, so it doesn't necessarily have to be the release date.
Yeah, so
the concept of like holdovers.
Oh,
like,
god, yeah. So with a single screen, it was very, very rare that we ever took anything on release, because distributors would want to lock you in for, you know, 2 or 3 screenings per day, exclusively for a week. Now if you're a single screen, that means you're screening nothing else other than that film. Yeah. And it's not really sustainable. So even the sort of bigger titles we might take on week 4 or week 5. Mm. But our audience would wait for them, because they'd rather come and see them at Mac in an environment that they're sort of suited to than go to a multiplex. So that didn't really impact us too much. So we did have a certain degree of flexibility. And we programmed a kind of month season at a time, which reduced a bit of flexibility. So you couldn't do holdovers if you wanted to. If something like does tremendously well at the box office and you're like, oh, we want to keep that on for an extra week's run, it was really hard to do that because you didn't have the slots. Mm. And even that, just kind of figuring out at what time you're going to put those films on, you know, the matinees and the early evening performances. Obviously, you don't want to put something on at 5 p.m. because who's going to go? They're all at work. And, you know, just navigating people and their patterns and their kind of journeys and how it would all sort of fit together. There's a little bit of science to it. If we had like an 8:15, 8:30 film, we'd make sure that there was some kind of dining offer in the cafe bar so that you could potentially, okay, well, I've got an hour to kill before the film, go and have dinner.
Did that give you the taste for programming? You kind of had your heart set on that after that role?
Absolutely, yeah. I think but doing that for 5 years was definitely what I wanted to do. And it was actually a bit of luck again. I'm a very lucky person that a couple of people sent me a job ad, and it was for a job at Flatpak Festival, whom I had worked with, the director Ian Francis and the programmer Sam Groves. I'd worked with them over a number of years whilst I was at Mac as a festival partner, and developed a children's strand called Colour Box with Sam that took place at Mac. And yeah, a few people sent me a job ad and was like, this job has got your name written all over it. It's like, it's your dream job. And I thought I already had my dream job. And I read the job description and it really was my dream job. It was working with Flatpak, it was working on the festival, but also a new project that was about kind of raising the profile of film culture in the Midlands and trying to get more screenings off the ground. We have a lack of screen density in the region. And, you know, being a part of something that's building and creating more film and more people going to see films in the region. I'm from Birmingham, so I'm very proud to be from Birmingham and love the city and the region. That I was like, I absolutely need to be a part of this. I think I probably had 2 of the best film jobs in Birmingham, because they don't come along that often. I mean, programming jobs particularly are quite scarce. Working at Film Hub, obviously we have an eye on things like that, and we'll put job opportunities out when they crop up. And I'd say in the last 12 months there's been 2 or 3 in the region.
Wow, why is it that you feel like film hasn't necessarily proliferated that much in Birmingham?
I think Birmingham lacks what pretty much every other city has in a sort of flagship 3 or 4 screen art house cinema. So if you think of any city in the UK, you can probably name, you know, that venue. So in Home in Manchester, you've got Chapter in Cardiff, you've got Film House in Edinburgh, you've got Tyneside in Newcastle. Everywhere's got one, except Birmingham. So we've got Broadway in Nottingham, we've got Phoenix in Leicester, but The Electric in Birmingham is great. It's a really beautiful cinema. It's 2 screens and it's sort of privately owned, so it's slightly more commercial, but it has a great program. And you've got Mac, which again is fantastic, but it's a 1 screen venue, so they're limited in what they can do. Definitely having that sort of flagship venue that's kind of flying the flag for British and independent film does make a difference. I think one of the great things about my job at the moment is finding that new talent and helping them to carve out a career in film, because there's people that are interested and that want to do it, but there aren't necessarily those opportunities. And part of it is making those opportunities and helping them make them for themselves. And I think Flatpak is a fantastic example of that. Ian Francis, the director, started it by showing films in the back room of a pub in Digbeth called The Rainbow, and you know, showing all sorts of experimental artist film and archive stuff and stuff on 16mm and VHS, and you know, people responded to it and thought, well, this is cool. And out of that has grown a huge festival that is, you know, spans the city and produces over 100 events and is funded by Arts Council and British Film Institute. And you know, it's established after just 13 years. You know, that's quite a relatively short space of time. And I think having that opportunity to say to other people, you can do it if you want to, if you've got that passion, you've got ambition, you've got that drive, then we can help you, and we have funding available. And in fact, one of the great success stories that has come out of Film Hub Midlands recently is one of our interns, Rico Johnson Sinclair, really passionate about LGBT plus cinema, particularly focusing on people of colour. And he just started his own festival. It was the first festival this year, and it was fantastic. Over 900 people came, and we helped fund him through our bursary schemes and through our show fund. And yeah, it's been tremendous.
So what is your current job title?
My current job title is, are you ready for this? Yeah. I can never remember what my job title is. It's Strategic Interventions Manager.
Okay.
Which, who knows what that means?
Yeah, yeah.
It means nothing.
So unpack that. What is your day-to-day?
I prefer Film Ninja, but they wouldn't let me. They wouldn't let me put that on my business card. But essentially, it's a job that involves supporting exhibitors across the region, whether that be in a multiplex or an art house cinema or a festival or a community-run cinema or a student cinema. Anyone who's showing films to a public audience is of interest to us. And we support them in many ways. So through funding, we can give them cash to put on events or to support whatever their venture is. We do advice and guidance. So we can kind of advise on anything really, from programming to audience development and marketing, to technical production and equipment, to how to put on an outdoor film, how to get film licenses, how to deal with distributors. I feel like through, you know, with the team, our sort of skill set is across the whole breadth of the sort of film industry. So there isn't really anything we can't help you with. And I kind of feel sometimes a bit like James Garner in The Great Escape. You know, I can get you pretty much whatever you want. And if I don't know the answer, then I'll find someone who does. Yeah. So one of the greatest joys of my current job is going out and talking to people that do want to put on films and have that ambition, whether they're programmers at venues or whether they're students that have just got a passion for it and they're just starting out on their journey and they want to do something exciting. And we work with a lot of young people. We've got a scheme called Build Your Own Film Night, where we go out to work with groups. We've worked with schools and universities and community groups, and it's kind of like a step-by-step guide onto how to put on a film night. And they get to put one on at the end. They get a little budget and they can choose their venue and they put on a film or a program of shorts of their choice. And it's been really great, and some of the ideas that they've come up with are far better than anything I could ever come up with. So it's really, really incredible and heartwarming to see the sort of the love and passion and the care that goes into it.
And is that part of the overall strategy of Film Hub Midlands, like creating greater access?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're very keen to, as I say, give those opportunities to young people that perhaps aren't obvious or they have to really dig to find them. So one of the things that we do is partner up with universities to make sure that the messaging is out there and that we can reach as many people as possible. Because that's the beauty. That's one of the reasons why I love film, because I think it is of all the art forms, it is the most accessible. I think everyone, almost everyone, has a relationship with film. Mm. You know, they've seen a film, whether that be at home in their living room or in a cinema, or there is a film for everyone.
Mm. And what kind of hours do you work? Like, is it like continuous?
It can be quite intense. So we're partway through the festival at the moment, so it's been very long hours with little sleep, but it's incredibly enjoyable. There is a bit of an ongoing joke that my peak hours are between 9 p.m. and 1 a.m. and that's probably quite accurate, actually. It's difficult. I mean, a general sort of average day is 10 till 6. But of course, because of the nature of putting on events, it often involves weekend work and evening work. And obviously during the festival, it's kind of all hands on deck all the time for a week, but we'll get a couple of days rest afterwards. I think I'm much better at the work-life balance thing now, but I think when your job is also the thing that you love the most, it's really difficult to switch off, because when I'm not working, I might a lot of my downtime is going to watch films in the cinema, because that's my absolute favourite thing to do. So it's hard to not blur those lines sometimes.
Yeah, I think it can work like both ways, and you can like be thinking about it too much and you're stressing about it, or you can be thinking about it because you're creatively incentivized.
Absolutely.
And you want to be coming up with those ideas, so it's not always a bad thing that
you can't
shut off, I guess. And how's the festival gone this year?
Really good. It's been incredible. We kicked off on Tuesday evening with A Page of Madness with a live score, which was incredible. It's been fairly smooth, I think. This is my fourth festival. It's Flatpak's 13th, and it feels slicker. Like the technical production has been brilliant. It's like we know what we're doing. It's amazing. But audience has been great. We've had some really, really good responses on Twitter. It's been a joy reading them, and each day seeing what audiences are thinking. And I just love the wealth of different comments that come back. A friend of mine went to see Diamantino on Thursday evening. And as he was getting up at the end, he overheard someone say, "Those flat pack people are really weird, aren't they?" So, I mean, that's great feedback. So, yeah.
And is weirdness the kind of guiding principle, or like, what's the ethos behind flat pack?
Not necessarily intentional weirdness, but definitely weirdness threads itself throughout the programme. I think one of the things we like to do is show people things that they wouldn't otherwise get to see. Film is great, film's exciting, but we want to do something slightly different with it. So our shorts programme, we like to sort of search far and wide across the globe to find those interesting short films that people won't have seen before. That's why we have lots of UK premieres. We want to give people something different, particularly if they do the festival circuit and they go to other festivals. We don't want to just be churning out the same things. And we're really interested in looking at how film kind of rubs up against other art forms. So we have a live cinema strand where we'll pair film with live music, orchestra, electronic, dance, theatre, or optical sound, where, you know, it's about performance and it's about AV and like using a range of different instruments, which could be electronic, it could be homemade, it could be a human body. You know, there's lots of different ways of looking at it. So that's kind of just finding those little gems that won't have been seen anywhere before.
And where do you find those gems?
All over, really. We go to other festivals. We tend to go to lots of international festivals, getting that inspiration and sometimes nicking ideas and chatting to people. That's a really good way, like chatting to all the programmers and finding out what they've seen and take their recommendations. Or they might go, "Oh, this isn't fit for my festival, but this has worked really well at Flatpak." Yeah. So they'll, you know, get in touch and say, "Have you seen this new piece?"
And what's one of the biggest challenges of the role?
What is one of the biggest challenges? Some days everything feels like a challenge. I think keeping it fresh and relevant and interesting, I think, is difficult. And as a programmer as well, so like not getting lazy and not thinking, okay, well, I'll put this film on because it is, you know, it's doing well, or it's got great reviews and it's going to sell out. But making sure that there's a balance and that, you know, you have the stuff that's commercially sort of successful, but then stuff that you're really passionate about and interested in, and taking a risk on things, and, you know, having those sort of internal battles of like, okay, I really like this, but it might not sell any tickets, so is it worth doing? That sort of inner belief to go, actually, I am going to take a punt on this and see where it goes. And more often than not, that it pays off. But I have definitely been in situations before I've put something on and you've got like four people and it's like, oh, God.
Yeah. And you just have to say, well, you don't.
Yeah. Happens. I think the first time it happens, your heart sinks and you want to cry and quit and then go and do something else. But you soon learn that actually, if those four people have an absolutely brilliant time and, you know, that film's spoken to them in some way or touched them, then it's completely worthwhile.
And the selection is about a gut instinct. Like, what's your kind of criteria for programming something, if you have one?
Nothing sort of fixed. I think, depending on what it is, whether it's a feature or a doc or a short film, but obviously it has to be something that the team likes, that we kind of believe in. It's not often that we'll program something that we don't like. So it is a little bit about personal taste, but, and whether or not it fits the festival as well, because we've seen work before that's really good, but it's not quite a flat pack sort of vibe. And so we'd perhaps, you know, say to other programmers, oh, we've seen this AV piece, it's great, but it wouldn't quite work for us, you know, but you should look into it. But yeah, there's no sort of magic formula. Mm. It's just stuff that interests us, and obviously not just us, but what we think audiences are going to want to see as well. And sometimes that's about just pure entertainment, what they're going to like, but sometimes it's about, okay, that could really challenge people, that could get them thinking about film in a different way. Or, you know, when we do archive stuff, archive has got a bit of a reputation of being dull and boring and just train films, but of course it's not, it's so much more than that. And there's some really amazing stuff in the archives that we've kind of discovered over the years, and it's the way you present it and the way you package it, and it's, you know, you can almost trick audiences into seeing it by putting it in a different way or putting a different spin on it. And that's the beauty of it. We screened a film a couple of summers ago about Birmingham. And it was brilliant. It was like this probably 8-9 minute short film about the city. And we screened it before a Schwarzenegger film. I think it was Total Recall. And the audience that came to that would never have sought out this archive film. So we kind of snuck it in there, and like the response was great. You had people like laughing their heads off, and it was a Brummie audience as well. So of course it really resonated with them, because it was quite self-deprecating, as Birmingham has a reputation for being. And yeah, it was brilliant. And people were coming up to us afterwards going, oh, where can I see that again? I want to show it to my friends. And those are those little beautiful moments where you're like, this is what film is.
How do you keep up with like trends in programming and stuff? Like, are there like themes or things that you notice?
Just kind of keeping on top of new releases, what's out there, doing a bit of online research, keeping an eye on the sort of box offices and indie box office that Charles Gamp puts out. That's a really good resource, actually, just to see what sells, really, and whether there's a particular trend. And actually, the last couple of years, the kind of live cinema stuff has really popped, and outdoor cinema, particularly in the UK, which is, you know, a bit of a miracle considering the weather in Britain. But so, yeah, and looking for those opportunities to kind of capitalise on it for as long as it lasts, because some trends come and go, and others sort of stay for a lot longer, and so going to festivals and going to like NFF and screening days that ICO run, which is an exhibitor sort of preview screening, making sure that we're getting out there and seeing as much stuff as possible and getting screening links and just watching films. I mean, that's one of the main perks of this job. I get to watch films and I get paid to do that, and that's just mind-blowing. And it's I feel very privileged to do that. The outdoor film sort of trend that's really popped over the last couple of years, we jumped on the bandwagon a few years ago, and we started doing screenings at Dudley Castle, which is in the Black Country. And that was a particular area that we wanted to look at, because it has a low screen density, and we're like, there's not much of an offer of independent film for the people of the Black Country. So what can we do? How can we kind of work with someone to create something that would be of interest? And so we thought we want it to be a bit of a spectacle. It's got to have a big enough pull to encourage people that are probably not bothered about film at all. And so we spoke to the Castle, and they were up for it, and it was great, and they've been an absolute pleasure to work with. And so the first year we did The Bride of Frankenstein in the grounds of the Castle, like the ramparts in the background, and the director, James Whale, is from Dudley, I think possibly the only famous person to ever come out of Dudley. So there was a real kind of local like affection there. We'd never done anything like that before on that scale, and we'd never done like outdoor work at that sort of scale before, so it was a bit of a risk. So we put the tickets on sale and waited, and we're like, okay, and didn't like put our marketing campaign out there, and a few weeks rolled by and sold one or two tickets, and I'm like, okay. And it's a big space. You have to fill it for it to look good and respectable, and not like an absolute failure. And a week went by, a few more tickets, and I'm like, okay, we're on 50, this is all right. And then it creeped up to like 200. I'm like, oh, 200's good, we've got 200, that's fine. And then in the end, I think it sold over 700 tickets.
Wow. And is that just word of mouth? Like,
how I think word of mouth was a huge part of it for Dudley, and also local press, which doesn't really work in Birmingham, but in those sort of smaller towns where the local newspaper is read and valued, then it works. And so we did a bit of a photo call, and we got some journalists out, and actually Sam, our programmer's wife, dressed up as the Bride of Frankenstein. She's an actor, and we did a shoot in the castle grounds, and it looked dead cool, and everyone lapped it up, and it was on the front page of like the Dudley News and the Stourbridge News and the Sandwell Chronicle, and it was really good fun.
Is that part of what keeps the job interesting, like taking those risks and looking for new places to do fun things?
Absolutely. It is a joy, and it definitely stressful when when they don't work. Sometimes they don't work. I have been in a pub once where there was me and a technician just going, oh, should we order a pizza and just watch it ourselves? But yeah, being able to have the freedom really to and a budget to go out and just try these new things and be able to explore ideas and be creative and have a crazy idea and go, you know what, let's just do this and see what happens. And that's kind of what Dudley was really, and it's been a success, and we're doing our fourth year with them this year. We're screening Beetlejuice and the Blair Witch Project, so we've doubled our output, and it's been great. We did Lost Boys and Night of the Living Dead last year, and then the year before we did An American Werewolf in London.
I don't know whether it's just that I'm new to it, but the amount of things that kind of get rescreened or like old things that come back,
sort of like rep stuff.
Yeah, right, and you get the opportunity to see them in cinemas now. Like, is that something that is picking up popularity, or has that always been the case?
I'm not sure that it has always been the case. I think it is popular right now. I think being able to see stuff on a big screen that you never have before, you might have only experienced. It wasn't until recently that I saw Jaws in the cinema for the first time. I'd watched it on TV before, but having, you know, there are some films that are made to be seen on a big screen. I think Jaws is a great example of that. That definitely makes a difference. There's been lots of re-releases. I think Clockwork Orange has just been re-released. 2001 Space Odyssey. These are very sort of cinematic films that are best seen not just on a big screen, but in that sort of communal environment. And I think that's one of the things that I love most about film is watching it with other people. Even if it's with 100 other strangers, it's still, I'm part of something. I'm sat there with 100 other people and they're all giggling away. It's infectious, and it just creates this enjoyment that's so much more than if I'm sitting at home on my own watching it on a laptop.
Yeah. And what do you think, or how do you go about creating that sense of community in a venue so that's so much more than just sitting in a room with strangers? What goes into creating a cinema space, something that people want to come to and spend time at?
I think it's about creating space to have conversations. So whether that's informally, you know, with a foyer space that enables people to hang around before or after the film to kind of have those conversations with each other, and just, it's good to come out of a screen and for someone to go, what did you think of that? You know, did you like that? Did you hate that? Why? And be able to talk about it. And you don't have to know anything about film to have an opinion. Yeah, that's one of the beautiful things about it. But also having an opportunity to have introductions or Q&As so that people can hear a different perspective on the film, and which might make you think differently and go, actually, yeah, I never thought about it like that before. And then it opens up that dialogue so that people can kind of chat about it. And just creating that safe space so that people feel like they can be part of it, and that it's not a club and it's not just for cinephiles, and actually anyone can have an opinion about a film.
Is there something you're proudest of having programmed?
I'd say my most favourite event that I did was part of Flatpak 11, and it was a kind of an immersive screening of Kill Bill. So I'm a Tarantino fan. And about a year or two before we did it, I went into this restaurant/karaoke bar/nightclub/community centre in Birmingham called the Huan Gate. It's got these big, beautiful, ornate, with like Chinese dragons on doors, and you go through into this space, and it's got like a bridge over a stream, and then it's got a restaurant. It's got these huge, beautiful, like intricate patterns on the wall, and there's a really dark space at the back, which is well suited to a screening environment. But it felt like I was walking into the set of Kill Bill, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is just like a really odd but incredible space, and immediately thought, this would be great to screen Kill Bill in, like this would be incredible. And so I'd had that idea for a while, and then with Flatpak, the festival was coming up, and it was like, we want something that's a bit of a crowd pleaser. And I was like, I had this idea, if we could get the venue on board, do you think we could make this work? And I felt like it wasn't enough to just screen the film in that space. So we had a food offer, so you could get a selection of kind of Pan-Asian food that was kind of in line with the film. Mm. And then I commissioned Rosie Kay Dance Company to recreate the Crazy 88 scene of the film.
Wow.
Which was it was so good. Like, you know, when you have something in your head, this idea of what you want it to look like, the reality was better than that. It was incredible. So we didn't quite have 88, but we had a whole bunch of dancers. Mm. And they emerged from either side of the screen at that exact moment in the film. And for it's about an 8-minute scene, and for 8 minutes, so they piled out into the audience and created this incredible dance routine that's kind of in sync with the motion and the movement that was happening on screen. So we'd got like this dancer, and she just, and again, fate played a huge role, because the lead female dancer actually did look a bit like Uma Thurman. It was incredible. Oh, yeah. It couldn't have gone any better. And she was martial arts trained, and was like, oh, this is just perfect. And so they created the scene alongside the film. It was just, it was magical. It was really magical, and like all the audience were just like completely enraptured, and it was just really, really cool.
And what do you think is the biggest misconception around what you do?
I think, actually, one thing that is a bit of a misconception, it's more about festivals than programmes, but a lot of people do ask, you know, what do you do for the rest of the year when you're not working on the festival?
Right.
And my job isn't just solely working on the festival. Obviously, the Film Hub Midlands is a year-round project, but people do think, like, well, what do you do for the other 50 weeks of the year when you're not working on the festival? And it's like, well, it takes a long time to programme and to produce a sort of large-scale festival. So.
Do you wish it was something that had more recognition? Or that people understood more?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Does it matter?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure. That's not something I've really given much thought to. But I think the people in the industry know, and other people at the festivals obviously know about it, but it's an interesting talking point, if nothing else, to kind of, it's quite nice actually, because it gives you an opportunity to kind of justify what you do as well. Like, actually, what we do is this, 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 and this.
And what's the biggest career lesson that you've learned?
Biggest career lesson that I've learned is probably, I would say, never give up, like, ever. A lot of the big successes in my career, or highlights definitely, have been because I've not let it go. Like, I've had an idea and I've wanted to make it happen, and no matter what barriers or obstacles or challenges come up, I've been like, no, I'm going to make this happen. And sometimes it takes ages, but if it pays off and it works, it's so worth it. It's so rewarding. I did an event at Moore Street Station, which is like an old Edwardian train station in Birmingham city centre, and screened Brief Encounter at the station, because it's that station was made for that film. And I applied for some funding through BFI for the Love Season, so I thought this is the perfect timing, it's going to work. And we were going to present the event in September, and we'd commissioned some actors to do some character sketches, and we'd got musicians to play the score, and it was going to be great. And the venue, we got the funding in April, and it was supposed to take place in the September, and it was really difficult trying to get hold of anyone who could kind of make any decision on whether or not we could use the station as a screening space. And it took just under 7 months for them to say yes, we could do it. So we ended up pushing it back, and the event took place in December, and it sold out, and it was great. And it just was such a lengthy process of being passed back and forth from different departments and people, and having to present risk assessments, and, you know, so much. And it's completely necessary, I understand it, but it can be frustrating when you just keep getting passed between people and no one seems to know any answers. And it's like, oh God, I want to make this happen. And I nearly gave up twice. I was like, no, I'm just going to call them one more time, and just was like a dog with a bone. And afterwards, it was really lovely, because they came to the event, the organisers and the people that kind of gave us the go-ahead, and they were like, this is amazing. If ever you want to do anything again, just let us know. Okay. So that 7 months of nagging, was definitely worth it.
Can anywhere be a screening space? Like, what's required?
Pretty much, if it's dark and it has power, and actually, you could do without power if you've got solar panels, which we don't currently have, but one of our technicians is kind of interested in that technology and looking into that, because that would be pretty cool if you could just pack a van and drive out to the middle of nowhere and do a screening. So yeah, really, realistically, yeah, anywhere can be, because even if it's not dark, you could use an LED screen.
Mm. And what do you think is special about putting something in a new space? Like, is it the immersion, like having that sort of symbiosis between where you're sitting and what you're watching?
I think that definitely appeals to people. Mm. And it depends what your motivations are, really, because Flatpak's always used many different venues across the city of Birmingham, and often it's about leading people around the city and getting them to rediscover the city, for locals rediscovery and for new people discovery, and that's through, you know, walking them from one part of the city to another, to go from one event to another. And it's as much about the journey as it is those physical spaces as well. But also, as you say, it can be a great opportunity to immerse someone in something and just give them that full experience. And Secret Cinema do it really well. Like, they can create entire sets that are like being in the film, and there's nothing quite as exciting as feeling like you're actually part of the action.
And what are your motivations?
I guess for me, I just want everyone to love cinema as much as I do. And I think it's those moments where you're in the cinema and the lights go down and it, you know, the screen comes on and it's packed full of people that are all there for the same reason, and they're all about to experience something together. Yeah, and it's those moments when, because, you know, you can get bogged down by the sort of daily dirge of reporting and admin, and there's times when you just want to go and sit in a cinema, but it is those moments, I think, when you get it right. Sometimes you get it wrong, but when you get it right, when everything comes together and it's all perfect, and, you know, and people are there and the feedback is good, you know, someone to come out of a cinema and go, oh man, that was amazing, you've blown me away with that choice, and it's like, yeah, this is why I do it.
And what's a film that you've seen by a woman director that you think is undervalued?
I would say that a film that I saw a couple of years ago, I'm a fan of Nadine Labaki. I think that's how you say it. I'm terrible with pronunciations. Yeah, it did. And I've seen that, and it was fantastic. I don't know if you've seen her 2011 feature, Where Do We Go Now?
No, so I've seen Caramel.
Yeah.
And Capernaum, but not
so Caramel. That's the one that kind of got me interested. Okay. It's kind of part comedy, part romance, part musical, part political commentary, you know, and there's not many films that pack in so much. And yeah, I just thought it was incredible. So I've sort of been following her career since 2011 and think, you know, she's definitely got things to say. Also, I love Deborah Haywood as well. I saw Pincushion. We showed it at the festival last year, and she came and did a Q&A. She's incredibly generous with her time and just, you know, really connected with the audiences. And that film, again, just sort of, you have those moments in films. I went to see it with, I went to watch it at Broadway Cinema in Nottingham, and I won't put any spoilers out there, but there's a key moment, and you'll know it when you see the film. The person next to me was like, oh my God, and swore because it was so like shocking. And it was just like, wow, that's not what I was expecting. So I love it when a film can surprise you as well. It went in a direction that I just couldn't have predicted.
And then finally, is there a woman that you've worked with who you think is doing great work that you want to spotlight?
Somebody that I've met recently, she has produced some short films. Her name's... she's got an incredible name, actually. She's called Leanne Moonraven, and she's a filmmaker, and she does she writes, directs, and acts. And I've seen a couple of her films, and they're really interesting. And I think it feels like she's just kind of honing her craft at the moment. But I'd be keen to see what she's doing in a few years' time and see how that journey sort of develops. But she came to my attention through Punch Records, who are based here at the Custard Factory. I have got a scheme called Back In, where they work with black filmmakers that are sort of new talent, new and emerging voices in film. So they're often directors or writers, and they have a development program over a year where they'll create a new piece of content and the short films that came out of that. So I think this is the second or third iteration, and there's some really really good stuff that's coming out of that project. And yeah, she's definitely a person that I was sort of, and she's just a very interesting person to talk to as well. So I was like, yeah, I want to see what you're doing.
Thank you so much to Amy for sparing the time to come on the podcast, especially when her festival schedule was so hectic, and thanks again to Flatpak for helping me pull off this special mini-series. I will be back next week with another incredible guest. In the meantime, please rate, review, subscribe, and recommend. This has been the Best Girl Grip podcast. Mm-hmm.